Yeah, I will be talking on the prospects of for glandless cotton production in New Mexico. And on the slide there, you can see the authors that are involved in this project from New Mexico State University, from Cotton Incorporated, which funded the projects, and also from USDA's Stoneville, Mississippi. First of all, what is glandless cotton? Before we go into that, I would just quickly, explain what, conventional cotton contains that glandless doesn't. The first thing is that the gossypol content, in conventional cotton, we have gossypol. And gossypol is a terpenoid aldehyde, toxic when eaten by non-ruminants, organisms with monogastric stomachs. And it's a natural protection against cotton pests. So the gossypol content, enables cotton to survive insect pressure. And the cotton seed, because that's one of the byproducts of cotton production, is normally fed to ruminants in regulated quantities because of the gossypol. If you feed them too much, then they can, actually die because of acute gossypol poisoning. And in contrast, the glandless cotton has negligible gossypol content, and in the old plants, in some cases you have gossypol in the roots, but not in the other parts of the plant. And the seeds of, because of that, the seeds of the glandless cotton, they are edible for non-ruminants, including humans, and this open up a wide opportunity for cotton seed to be used, as an important product, byproduct of cotton. And then also the problem we have with glandless cotton is that it opens up the cotton plant as well for attacks from more pests, because there is no gossypol in the upper part of the cotton. Then the whole plant becomes susceptible to piercing and chewing insects, and also vertebrate pest damages have been reported. Just to show you what the impact of gossypol on the left-hand side, you will see that this is a cold-pressed cotton seed oil from a conventional cotton with gossypol. You can see it's very dark, and then when you look on the right-hand side, this is from this gossypol-free cotton, which is glandless cotton. It's clear and golden, almost ready to use. So you can see the impact of gossypol on, the quality of the oil. And then, with this glandless seed produced by glandless cotton, then we have a potential source of food and feed, particularly, the protein content, which is about 22% in cotton seed. And for every pound of cotton fiber, we have 1.6 pounds of seed. That is quite a huge amount. And yearly, we produce about 44 million metric tons of cotton seed worldwide, and it's equivalent to about 10 million metric tons of protein. And then the utilization of this protein, depends on the end users. When you look at the current use, as cattle feed, that's where, you have the largest volume and then the lowest value, for utility of this glandless cotton seed. But as you move up to the human hand, then it becomes, we don't need as much, but, it can attract the high value, and in between you have different categories. But here in the aquaculture, that's one of the potential that glandless cotton can actually, function, and especially as a fish meal replacement. We'll talk a little bit about that as we progress in the presentation. Then why are we testing this kind of cotton in New Mexico? Granting the fact that over the past years, several years ago, about 30 years, there has been evaluation of this glandless cotton, and it could not survive because of the pest pressure in different places where they were tested. But now in New Mexico, because of some eradication of major pests, such as pink bollworm and boll weevil in the 90s, onwards, then we have low pest pressure in New Mexico. And then we started evaluating this glandless cotton in 2010, we started with this variety called Akela GLS, which was developed in California. And, later on in 2011, 2012, we got some two other lines from Stoneville, Mississippi, STV glandless and Jaco glandless. And just to show you some quick agronomic evaluations that we did, you know. So we grew especially Aquila GLS, which we got very early, you know, which we had abundance of, you know, in 2010. We grew it across several sites, you know, in 2011. And then you can see that these are the lint yields of Aquila GLS, you know, across different sites. You know, basically we got yield from them. They were not destroyed. You know, we were initially concerned that we would not even see anything, you know, but we got at least a considerable lint yield in some sites like La Union. I mean, it was pretty impressive. But what I want us to look at is generally you will see that the Aquila GLS was underperforming, you know, when you compare it to Aquila 1517-99, which is one of the Aquila that was developed in New Mexico and adapted to New Mexico environment. And if you look at this is another glandless line from Stoneville, Mississippi, and we call it STV glandless. You know, it appeared to have performed very well in 2011 here, you know, at Atagia, and then also, you know, when we put both of them together in Clovis in 2011, we can see that, you know, they were doing well, not significant differences. But generally, where we have the traditional variety, you know, the local adapted Aquila, comparing it with compared to Aquila GLS, you know, it was underperforming. We were seeing reduced lint yields. And then the same story for cotton seed yield, you know, the different different sites, you know, it kind of follows what we saw with the lint yield. Then another trial that we've done for past 2 years in 2012 and 2013, we put all the three variety glandless lines, you know, Jaco, STV, and Aquila GLS together. And for 2 years, this is the summary of results for 2 years. We couldn't see any significant differences between those three different cultivars. But the interesting thing is that it appears that Jaco, you know, it's showing a little bit a trend towards having better yield compared to the two other lines, you know. But we still continue to test this and see, you know, whether, you know, this trend is for real or is just a function of seasonal variability. Then another trial, we put transgenic and then conventional Aquila developed for New Mexico together with Aquila GLS. And you can see the lint yield significantly lower for Aquila GLS. So it was underperforming the, you know, the conventional varieties, the two transgenic, phytogen 499, phytogen 375. And this is Aquila 1517-08, you know, the recent ones. And then the same, well, it's kind of following the same trend, but, you know, between Aquila and the two transgenic variety, we didn't see any significant differences in the seed yield. But, you know, the trend was towards, I mean, the transgenics were having higher seed yield, but the traditional Aquila had the highest yield here. So, yeah, we can see that the yield is not up to scratch when we look at the glandless varieties that are, you know, currently available. It doesn't compare with the current transgenic varieties in terms of lint yield. Then looking at the insect pressure, you can see that, well, on this graph, it's a kind of laboratory experiment to just look at the pressure of bollworm survival, I mean, to see bollworm survival in glanded and glandless. You know, the nitrogen rate did not make much difference, but what we can see is that the percentage survival, you know, for glandless cotton was high with respect to bollworm. And then we also looked at beet armyworm damage. You know, this is the glandless on top, and this is the glanded. You can see that the glandless experienced a higher beet armyworm field damage in 2011. Although this did not affect the yield significantly, but we noticed that. And then you can see also the effect of beet armyworm survival glandless and glanded, you know, just similar to the bollworm. You can see that it survived better on the glandless cotton. Well, our research direction will be to document the impact of pests. You know, we'll be looking at that in the future because the survival rates of those major cotton pests, they were higher on the glandless. So we have to be very, very careful about, you know, the pest pressure. And also, since the glandless lines are underperforming, we need to, you know, look also at the breeding and improvement of the glandless lines. And then we need to continue with the agronomic evaluations across more sites. Then another part of the research on glandless, you know, that has been funded by Cotton Incorporated is to look at, you know, different utility of the glandless cotton seeds, especially the cotton seed meal. You can see the products that have been developed in the past, cotton seed butter, cotton seed milk, cotton seed snacks, you know, they're all in the pipeline. You know, a lot of research is still going on there. And then perhaps one of the greatest research that has been done, you know, with respect to utilization of the cotton seed meal is, you know, for the aquatic applications, such as, you know, fish meal replacement. And a research, you know, was recently concluded, I mean, preliminary research to show that when you replace fish meal, even at 100% level, it didn't have any negative effect on shrimp performance. So you can safely replace those fish meal protein, which is very, very expensive, with, you know, glandless cotton seed meal. So that's going to be a possibility for a great utility of the glandless cotton seed meal. Then in summary, just to put everything together, you know, commercial glandless cotton productions appears to be viable in New Mexico. We can see that we've been able to get quite some decent lint yield, although it's still under what we are expecting, I mean, what a conventional farmer would want from lint yield. So because of that, you know, we need to do some more breeding and, you know, improvement work on the glandless lines, you know, and some preliminary breeding results for higher yields appear promising. There is a lot of research going on in that, and it will continue to address the gap between the glandless and the commercial cultivar in terms of lint yield. And also, constant monitoring of pest pressure, you know, will continue, because that is a major area of concern. You know, we are not sure whether new pests will develop, so all those things will need to be monitored so that in case there is new pest coming in, then we can quickly put a good control measure in place. And then the utilization research has continued and will continue, and you know, targeting different categories of end users. Thank you very much. Yeah, I have a few minutes for questions. I have some of my collaborators in the audience, so in case I get stuck with answering your question, they are there.
Are there any questions for John?
Okay.
What do you estimate the added value to cotton seed?
Well, yeah, that is a very, very... Yeah, the question is, can you estimate the added value to cotton seed? Well, right now, we have not done a detailed economic analysis, but, you know, some just projections, you know, like, for instance, you know, in New Mexico, the average sale of cotton seed is about $300 per ton of cotton seed. So some economists have estimated that if the cotton seed is used as fish meal replacement, it can move the price to about $800 per ton, you know. And some have even, if it goes into human food, you know, for human food, it can even move up to $1,500 a ton. So in which case, you know, maybe the seed will become the main product and the lint the byproduct. So we are not sure. These are all estimates and projections. And also it depends on successful commercialization of glandless cotton. So there are still a lot of things that we still need to work out in order to make this concept very feasible.
Okay,
thank you very much.